Hello, everybody. Thank you again for tuning into Well Done Wrestling. My name is John Fitzmaurice. Today, I'm actually going to do a retro review. I'm going to review an old school pay-per-view that's happened in the past with either with WWF. If you guys would like me to do a WCW pay-per-view review in the near future, you can gladly suggest it to me on the comments or just Facebook me or send me a message on Instagram or Snapchat, whatever it is on social media. Today I'm going to review the 1990s Survivor Series. We are just a couple days away from the mid-fall classic of Survivor Series. This is a couple days away from Los Angeles, California. Today I'm reviewing the 4th Annual Survivor Series that was held at the Hartford Civic Center in Hartford, Connecticut. The Survivor Series is the second longest running pay-per-view in World Wrestling in WWE history. Well, here we are here in the World Wrestling Federation era. We're here for World Wrestling Federation's 1990 Survivor Series. As we kick off with the Warriors take on the Perfect Team, which was the Warriors comprised of Team Captain, World Wrestling Federation Champion, the Ultimate Warrior, teaming up with the Intercontinental Champion, Texas Tornado, Kerry Von Erich, and the Legion of Doom, taking on the Perfect Team comprised of Team Captain, Mr. Perfect, and all three members of Demolition, Axe, Smash, and Crush, with their managers, Bobby the Brain Heenan and Mr. Fuji, respectively. During the matches, we saw, you know, let me say this. I get Perfect and Tornado were feuding because Tornado defeated Perfect for the Intercontinental title at SummerSlam of that year. Legion of Doom and Demolition, they have a history because Demolition claimed that LOD cost them the tag belts at SummerSlam. And after Demolition added a third member during that summer to get an unfair advantage. And the Warrior being there just seemed to be thrown off a little bit. And I get it. He was the WWF champion and you want him to be a captain of the team. So it kind of made sense to have him there. But it's like, whatever. And I knew during the fall of 1990, they were doing the matches with Demolition against the Legion Doom and the Ultimate War on the house circuit. So that explains it right here. The eliminations were as followed. Ultimate Warrior pinned eliminated Axe with the flying shoulder tackle and a big splash. This would be the last time we would see Axe on WWF TV as a competitive, as he was having some heart problems around this time. And shortly thereafter, President Jack Tunney made an announcement over that weekend that there would no longer be three members of Demolition. It would only be two now, as it would lead to Smash and Crush. As Demolition's days of dominating the tag team division were over, and so was their time in this matchup as well, as the remaining members of Demolition, Smash and Crush, along with the Legion of Doom, got disqualified after brawling. And the referee tried to break it up. After Smash pushed down the ref and Hawk hit the referee in the gut, he decides to disqualify all four men from the match. So now it's Warrior and Tornado against Mr. Perfect. Perfect eliminates the Texas Tornado with the Perfect Plex that would set up an eventual rematch for the Intercontinental title on an episode of Superstars, which ultimately would see Mr. Perfect regain the Intercontinental title. And I know this may note, which that title change happened days prior to the Survivor Series on a Superstars taping where it wouldn't air until December of that year. I know it's kayfabe, but Tornado was the IC champ doing a Survivor Series, but days prior to Survivor Series, a little fact just so everyone knows, on November 19th of 1990, on a Superstar tapings that would air on December 15th of that year, Mr. Perfect would defeat the Tornado to reclaim the Intercontinental title after Ted DiBiase got involved. So now it's one-on-one between Perfect and the Warrior. Warrior would defeat Mr. Perfect and be the sole survivor and move on to the grand finale, Match of Survival, which was another big thing throughout the night, as there would, at the end of the night, there would be a big match of survival of all the survivors going out against each other. So far, it's the Ultimate Warrior on one side. We go on to the next match, which would be the Dream Team versus the Million Dollar Team. The Dream Team comprised of Team Captain of the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, teaming up with Coco Beware and the World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions, the Hart Foundation, as they took on the Million Dollar Team, which was captained by the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, Rhythm and Blues, and a mystery partner to be named that night. Originally, it was supposed to be Bad News Brown, but I guess I heard from backstage sources, I guess either he had a contract dispute with Vince McMahon or he asked for his release. I don't know exactly what happened, but I guess DiBiase was smart enough and to pay off Bad News Brown to not be on the team because he knows Bad News Brown's a tendency of not trusting people, not getting along with his partners, and walking out on them. So good on DiBiase's part, I guess. As we get to the match, the Dream Team comes out, Dusty's out, Coco's out, Bret and Anvil come out, and doing the the entrance, Roddy Piper says on, by the way, the commentary for this show was the late great Gorilla Monsoon and the late great Roddy Piper. Piper mentioned doing after the entrance, he mentioned that he wanted to state that Bret Hart dedicated this matchup to his fallen brother Dean, who passed away just the day before the 1990 Survivor Series. I don't know exactly what was the death or the reason for Dean's. I have to look it up, but Bret Hart, he asked Piper to announce it that he's dedicated this match to his fallen brother Dean. And Piper has gone off phrasing Bret saying, "That's a true competitor and a wonderful guy. We love you, man." So now Rhythm and Blues come out, Honky Tonk Man and Greg the Hammer Valentine with jet black hair. Yuck. This was Greg Hammer Valentine's lowest point in his career. They were managed by Jimmy Hart. Ted DiBiase comes out with his bodyguard Virgil, and then DiBiase announces his fourth and mystery partner to be The Undertaker, managed by Brother Love. And wow, who would have thought The Undertaker would make a big impact and look where he's at today in WWE today and in the history of this company. Undertaker would dominate early in the match. He would just beat up Bret and Anvil a little bit. And then Coco Beware gets into the match and goes fly into the ropes. Thanks for coming. And it's the first victim of the Tombstone Piledriver within 90 seconds. Coco Beware is eliminated by the Undertaker. Then a few minutes later, we see Jim the Anvil Neidhart eliminate the Honky Tonk Man with a running power slam. That makes it 3-on-3. DiBiase would eliminate Jim the Anvil Neidhart a couple minutes later with a clothesline after Virgil trips the Anvil and distracts him. Then the Undertaker eliminates Dusty Rhodes with a flying axe handle, knocks out the American Dream. Now it's down to 3-on-1, Bret Hart against the Hammer, Taker, and DiBiase. After Taker eliminates Dusty, Brother Love is kicking Dusty. Dusty's trying to get back, but then Taker sees it and decides to attack the American Dream, only to be counted out. So now it's 2-on-1. The Hammer is going for the figure four leg lock on Bret Hart. Bret counts it as a small package, and now it's down to 1-on-1. DiBiase Bret had a nice couple minute singles match right here. It looked like at one point Bret was playing possum, and it looked like he was going to pull off an upset, but did not do that yet. And then Bret went for a flying crossbody. DiBiase's momentum rolls over. 1, 2, 3. DiBiase is the sole survivor for his team and moves on to the grand finale match of survival. I have to say about Bret Hart's performance in this matchup right here. And like I said, he dedicated this match to his brother Dean that passed away the day prior. And I'm sure that had to have been hard for him to compete like that, you know, especially a day after he lost his brother, and he wanted to go out there and show a competitor he is, and he was up 3-1 at one point. Of course, we know Taker got counted out. They wanted to protect the Undertaker because he made his debut and he's scary looking, and then to fought back, eliminate the Hammer, and have a good singles few-minute outing with Ted DiBiase, and I think it showed to Vince McMahon, he's probably said to himself, "You know what? I don't know where, I don't know when, but I think someday Bret Hart is going to be a future Intercontinental Champion, and we would see that within the following year." The next match, we saw the Vipers, which was captained by Jake the Snake Roberts, Superfly Jimmy Snuka, and the Rockers, Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty, taking on the Visionaries, which was captained by the model Rick Martel, the Warlord, and Power and Glory with the with Hercules and Paul Roma, managed by the Doctor of Style, Slick. Now, in this matchup right here, as we saw, we got the build-up. Martel blinded Shake Roberts with his cologne arrogance on an episode of Superstars on the Brother Love Show. So Jake was temporarily blinded on one side. The Rockers and Power Glory had some history, as at SummerSlam, the Power Glory injured Shawn Michaels' right knee and was not able to compete in the match, and they beat up Marty Jannetty. It was a glorified handicap match, and the Warlord and Superfly were just added because, while Warlord was managed by Slick along with Power and Glory, and Snuka was there, I guess, just to even the odds. And so we get to the match. The Warlord eliminates Marty Jannetty with a power slam in midair. Rick Martel eliminates Snuka with a handful of tights. Power Glory eliminates Shawn Michaels with a superplex body splash combo, which looked very cool move and very devastating at the time. I don't get why Power Glory didn't get a run with the tag team belts at the time. And then Jake Roberts eventually gets counted out after Martel tries to blind Jake with the arrogance, but then Jake saw it coming. He chases Martel away, even though Martel wasn't the legal man. So Jake gets counted out. So the winners and sole survivors are the entire team of the Visionaries, including Rick Martel, which was the first time ever in Survivor Series history that an entire team would actually win the match and be the sole survivors. So the entire Visionaries team of Martel, Warlord, and Power and Glory joined the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase to face the Ultimate Warrior. It looks like it's going to be a 5-on-1 disadvantage at the moment. And by the way, before I get to the next match, I forgot to reveal the backstory with the Dream Team, Million Dollar Team. DiBiase bought off Sapphire from Dusty Rhodes and made Dusty very upset. The Hearts and Rhythm Blues, I guess, had a feud in 1990, and the Hearts were still tag champs. And Coco Beware was there just to be the victim of The Undertaker's first tombstone. But there you go. The next matchup, we have the Hulkamaniacs taking on the Natural Disasters, which saw the team of, with Hulk Hogan's team of, led by Captain Hulk Hogan, along with the Big Boss Man, Tugboat, and Hacksaw Jim Duggan, as they took on the Natural Disasters, which was comprised of Captain Earthquake, along with Canada's Strongest Man, Dino Bravo, Haku, and the Barbarian, with all four of these men were managed by Jimmy Hart and Bobby the Brain Heenan, respectively. Actually, Haku was actually replaces Ravishing Rick Rude, as Rick Rude was actually supposed to be the fourth member of the Natural Disasters, as he was feuding with the Big Boss Man at the time, as him and Bobby Heenan made some derogatory comments about the Boss Man's mother on TV. And eventually, what had happened was that we know that Rick Rude's contract expired and it ended in a dispute where I guess that Rick Rude decided he didn't want to renew, or he was upset with his payout from 1990 SummerSlam. As I know that Rick Rude was upset with the payout, and you know, Rick Rude asked for his release. So now he is now on WTV, Jack Tunney decided that he suspended Rick Rude indefinitely, and Bobby Heenan would fulfill his obligations in the future. So, and of course, we know the Bossman would get to Bobby Heenan doing the matchup. The eliminations are as followed. Big Bossman eliminates Haku with a sidewalk slam. Hacksaw Jim Duggan actually gets disqualified after hitting Earthquake with a 2x4. Hulk Hogan eliminates Dino Bravo with a small package. I repeat, Hulk Hogan eliminates Dino Bravo with a small package. When do you see the Hulkster using moves like those, brother? Earthquake eliminates the Big Boss Man with a couple elbow drops. Earthquake and Tugboat would fight each other and get counted out. And then Hulk Hogan eliminates the Barbarian to win the match for his team and be the sole survivor. So now Hulk Hogan joins the Ultimate Warrior to take on Ted DiBiase and the entire Visionaries team. Still not looking good. We would then see an interview with the Macho King Randy Savage as to why he's called out the Ultimate Warrior and he's been challenging him and how he thinks he's the Ultimate Chicken, blah, blah, blah. That would set up their eventual WrestleMania 7 career-ending match, which I can do a WrestleMania 7 review in the near future. But nonetheless, we don't see the Macho King out here. He cuts a promo. Nothing long. It's just short, sweet, to the point. The next matchup, which I think is the weakest match of the night, it is the Alliance taking on the Mercenaries, as the Alliance was led by Captain Nikolai Volkoff with Tito Santana, and the Bushwhackers taking on Team Captain Sergeant Slaughter, Boris Sukov, and the Orient Express, which were all managed by General Adon and Mr. Fuji, respectively. I think originally Akeem was supposed to be the fourth member for Slaughter's team, but I guess Akeem, I don't know if Akeem got injured or he got released, so they replaced him with Boris Sukov. Long story short, Boris Sukov was the first one eliminated by Tito Santana with a flying forearm. One of the Bushwhackers eliminates Sato, and then Tito eliminates Tanaka. So now it's Slaughter against four men, and unlike Jake Roberts, who was up against the entire Visionary team with Blinded on one side and he had the support of the crowd, Slaughter does not have the support of the crowd, but he does eliminate Nikolai Volkoff first. Thanks for coming and being a team captain. Not. Then he eliminates both the Bushwhackers back to back and then evens it up against him and Tito Santana. Referee gets taken out. Santana was going for the flying forearm of Sergeant Slaughter, and then General Adnan hits Santana in the back with the back of the flagpole. Slaughter gives him the camel clutch. Referee tells him to get off, rings the bell. Slaughter assumes that he won the match, and then the Howard Finkel announces, "Ladies and gentlemen, Sergeant Slaughter has been disqualified. Therefore, the winning survivor was Tito Santana," as he joins Hogan and the Warrior to take on DiBiase and the entire Visionary team. Again, still, I don't like those odds one bit, but I have to say, I give credit to Santana. He had two eliminations, and he was the sole survivor where he beat Slaughter because Slaughter got disqualified. So this was WWF's way of throwing Santana a bone right here. As, hey, you get to be a sole survivor, and you get to join with Hogan and the Warrior in the main event in the grand finale. We saw another debut. Undertaker was not the only debut we saw at the Survivor Series 1990. We saw the debut of the Gobbledygooker, who hatched out the big giant egg. Him and Mean Gene would be dancing for the crowd, making people happy and laughing. And we get to the main event, which was the grand finale match of Survival. Saw World Wrestling Federation champion Ultimate Warrior teaming up with Hulk Hogan and Tito Santana as they took on the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, the Mono, Rick Martel, Power and Glory, Warlord, and Hercules. Paul Roman, Hercules, and the Warlord, which were managed by Virgil and the Dr. Style Slick. 30 seconds into the match, Tito Santana eliminates the Warlord immediately with a flying forearm. I guess this was Tito's payback of getting at the Warlord, because the Warlord did defeat Tito Santana at the 1990 SummerSlam event. Then later on, DiBiase would eliminate Tito Santana with a stun gun. Thanks for coming, Tito. That's the reason why Tito was on the team, because they need a babyface to job out in the main event. Then we see Hogan and Worm clean house the rest of the way as Hogan eliminates Paul Roman with a clothesline. Martel gets himself counted out after he didn't want to fight anymore. And then Hogan eliminates DiBiase. And then the Ultimate Warrior eliminates Hercules for the decisive fall, as your sole survivors were Hulk Hogan and the World Wrestling Federation champion, the Ultimate Warrior. As I remember, these two fought in the main event of WrestleMania 6 after they had a barn burner of the Ultimate Challenge. Now these two are celebrating as partners. And I thought maybe they could have done a rematch here at WrestleMania 7 if Warrior was still champion and Hogan would find a way to get a title shot against the Ultimate Warrior. But that ended up not happening. As we get closer to WrestleMania season, I could actually do a WrestleMania 7 review and discuss some, all those possibilities and where Hogan and Ward would end up doing. So that is my review of the 1990 Survivor Series. Like I said, if you guys would like me to review an old school pay-per-view or what, or do a review on any of the WWF events or WWE or even WCW, let me know. So that is my retro review for 1990 Survivor Series. Hope you guys have a wonderful day. Take it easy.